Hey, welcome to Monday. It is, as you will find out, it's Wieners Out Day. And we took that every place you could imagine. So Wieners Out, we'll talk about that.
And, you're welcome for that, by the way.
Yeah, and Cosby. We actually get into Cosby and blackface and the little dog weather advisory that is going on. It's kind of a confusing show, but that's not where we start. Where we start, actually, is Smollett.
Yes, Smollett and his story falling apart, of course. We should remind you that tonight on television, Glenn will be going through all of the cases, not only Smollett, but the dozens of cases of people claiming to have racial attacks perpetrated against them, mostly inspired by Donald Trump, that turn out to be, you know, totally fake.
We have John Ziegler is joining us for the podcast today, and what will his punishment be? Stu had a really good idea.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
And we'll be getting into on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
So here it is. This is the way the media works now. They find a story that confirms their bias, confirms their narrative, and then they run it constantly, relentlessly. Then when the real story comes out, they minimize the exposure of the correction, and then they repeat. Look at the major stories that have broken recently that have been so very wrong, that have occupied so much of our time. Kavanaugh. Was that true? Nope. Turns out, nope. Then you had the Covington story. Was that true? Nope. Look at how they corrected both of those. Just barely. Just barely. And I say, well, in both of them, would you even say barely, Stu? Because they were still saying they're guilty of something.
Certainly haven't corrected the Kavanaugh thing.
I mean,
and they just say that it was. I mean, I think they would still say that one's true.
Yeah, well, I mean, do you remember the FBI stories that came out afterwards and what the FBI had uncovered? That it was bogus? That the people that were. You don't know for sure because, you know, we're still going off of people's memories, but it was her beach friends that kind of helped shape this story?
Yeah, I mean, I think. All of these stories are stories that they would still hang on to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
So they're not really corrected. Mm-hmm. They're not really corrected. Let me give you the knee-jerk reactions that the media had on this Jussie Smollett hoax. This is from Insider Edition, CNN, E! News, Headline News, CNBC, TMZ, just to name a few. Listen.
Beaten with a noose around his neck and hospitalized. Empire star Jussie Smollett was the victim of a vicious, racist, and homophobic attack.
His attackers hurled racial and homophobic slurs.
Two people yelled racist and homophobic slurs.
Racial and homophobic slurs.
Not only homophobia, we're talking about racism. We're talking about hate with steroids.
They are looking for two suspects who were apparently wearing Make America Great Again hats.
The offenders uttered, "This is MAGA country."
The hate crime went down early this morning in Chicago.
Officials are investigating the alleged assault as a hate crime.
And now police say they're investigating this as a possible hate crime.
Anyone attacked in a hate crime like this is an outrage.
This is stomach-turning, mind-boggling information. It's out of control.
It is out of control, isn't it? Isn't it out of control? Now, these are just the reactions on TV. It just as bad, if not worse in some cases, in print and online. I'll give you one example. You know the situation is bad when TMZ is connecting the dots and seeing through a guy's story. It's TMZ. Listen to this, quote, "The sources say there were red flags from the get-go. Cops were extremely suspicious when Jussie took them out to the area where they said he was attacked and pointed to an obscure camera saying how happy that the attack was on video. Well, it turns out the camera was pointing in the wrong direction. Cops thought it was weird he knew the location of that camera." And then there's this. "We're told investigators didn't believe the two alleged attackers screamed, 'This is MAGA country,' because not a single Trump supporter watches Empire," end quote. No, I'm sure there is one somewhere, maybe, probably not. Here's the man himself in an interview just days after the alleged beating. I'm sorry, the alleged modern day lynching. Here he is in an interview with ABC News complaining about people making stuff up.
That I had said that they were wearing MAGA hats. I never said that. I didn't need to add anything like that. They called me a They called me a There's no which way you cut it. I don't need some MAGA hat as the cherry on top of some racist sundae. I've heard that it was a date gone bad, which I so resent, that narrative. I'm not going to go out and get a tuna sandwich at a salad to meet somebody. That's ridiculous. And it's offensive. Yes, there's Grindr. Yes, there's Jacked. Yes, there's all of these things, which I have not been on in years. I can admit that I was on that back in the day. I was single. You know what I'm saying? But I have not been on that in years. But aside from that, it's offensive. And I absolutely resent that narrative because it's bull.
It's bull. It's bull. And he knows bull, apparently. Now, he starts out. Play the first 10 seconds of that for me again, please.
That I had said that they were wearing MAGA hats. I never said that. I didn't need to add anything like that.
Stop. Here's a story from USA Today. The headline, Empire star Jussie Smollett. Attackers yelled, "This is MAGA country," during the beating. Chicago police, blah, blah, blah. You get down to about eight paragraphs down, and it says, Sergeant Cindy Guerra confirmed to USA Today that Smollett said in a follow-up interview the next day that his alleged attackers yelled, "This is MAGA country." So apparently, there was some confusion on whether or not he said it. Now, he seems to be confused yet. And the Chicago police said, no, 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 he didn't say that. Then USA Today called and said, could you check on that? They checked on it, said, oh, yep, you know what? The next day he did say that. So I guess he does need a little cherry on a racist sundae. The problem is he's the racist. Let me give you a story from, two stories from the press just this weekend. There is a story from the Washington Post where the writer, now this is an editorial writer, a writer from the Washington Post, an editor, said she really needs this to be true. She needs this to be true. What do you mean you need this to be true? I want this to be true. I need it to be true. Does anybody remember after 9/11 when we started having copycats? Remember when we started getting all kinds of powder sent to us and we were hoping, praying that this was not an American copycat, that this was somebody that was doing this, that we wanted to trust each other? Do we remember that feeling? Maybe it was just me who wanted that, but I don't think so. You want to live in a country where this is true? I want to live in a country where this is not true. Now, she went on to say, because just think of the damage that will be done. Which brings me to the second story, this one from the New York Times. Republicans are already demonizing Democrats as socialists and baby killers. Now, this isn't related to the Smollett case, but yet it is. We don't believe the Smollett case, so apparently we just all group all of it together. We don't believe this guy, so we're not going to believe any racism exists. Well, that is a danger of crying wolf. However, I don't think that's who the American people are. And look at how the New York Times story, this is not an editorial, this is a story. Republicans are already demonizing Democrats as socialists and baby killers. Well, I got news for you. If the baby is born and then you kill it, what else would you be called? If you believe capitalism is a thing of the past and you believe that the government can run things better, that's a socialist. What else would you be called? Jussie Smollett wanted so badly to believe that Americans were just homophobic racists that he had to hire two Kenyans to perpetrate this hoax on us. I guess there are jobs that Americans still won't do. Now, I don't know how he could have possibly thought that one of them was named Cletus, because they don't look like a Cletus to me. He orchestrated this. I want to take a break and come back with just a list of all of the stories where people have been orchestrating these things, because that's exactly what's happening. And the press doesn't get it. And it gets worse and worse and worse. And if the press doesn't wake up, we're screwed. We're screwed. How's this going to fix any? How's this going to be fixed? How are we going to come together if the press doesn't see their involvement? But again, they don't want to see their involvement. Again, it's just confirmation bias. Others are doing this. We're not involved at all. Yes, you are. I'll give you the list of just the things that are directly correlated with this. Donald Trump is to blame because this racist thing happened and it turned out to be a hoax. Okay. Cyber stalking. Making hoax bomb threats. Ann Arbor woman reported a hate crime. She was suffering from depression, and she said that she had been prompted. She had been attacked, and she told I don't know why they picked on me. She said maybe it was a safety pin that she was wearing. What does a safety pin represent? Do you have any idea? Okay, well, somebody out there apparently knew what a safety pin meant and didn't like that. And so it's a hate crime. Well, it turns out, nope, she was just crazy. She had made a superficial scratch on her face, and she was embarrassed about it. And so she said a stranger had done it to her while she was walking. And her friend said, you should report it to the police. And I made a big mistake by doing that. Yep. Kansas State. Second time in 2 years, racist slurs at Kansas State was a hoax. Officers received a report of a note using a racial slur posted on a door in an apartment complex. Upon questioning, the person who reported the incident admitted to creating and posting the note to their own door. The matter will be addressed, they said. But this was the one that had the note, beware N-words, live here. Remember that story? Yeah, that was a hoax. How about this one? Villanova. Villanova had a report of a black female student allegedly knocked down by young white males yelling, Trump, Trump, Trump. But the student doesn't want to pursue the matter, but wanted to make sure that it's hard to move forward. It's hard to move forward. Well, yeah, and it was hard for the university to move forward because it was fake. So they couldn't find anybody that had done that. New Jersey man arrested, 58 years old. He was arrested in connection with racist and politically charged messages that appeared spray painted on a property in South Philadelphia on the day after the Trump election. he was arrested because he wrote Trump rules, and Trump rules black B words and the letter T. I guess that's just, I have no, no idea.
Could have been a tea party. Could have been, there's a lot of things that could be done.
Yeah.
Test low T.
Yeah.
Could have a low testosterone issue.
A report of a racist note on a black student's windshield. This happened in Minnesota. A racist threat against a St. Olaf student that touched off campus-wide protest and forced the college to cancel classes earlier this month was a fake, according to this story. A threat, an anonymous typewritten note, was fabricated. It was a strategy to draw attention to concerns about the campus climate. It was not a genuine threat. The note was tucked into the windshield of a black student's car, and they were just trying to show that, you know, this is something good has got to come out of such a bad thing. But it was full of racial epithets and of course, Trump. Woman told police she was driving home when four teens confronted her, yelled Trump 2016, and told her she didn't belong here, to go home. The woman, who told the police she had a hateful note on her car after a group of teens did this to her, said, I made the entire story up. Muslim woman. She reported a hate crime on the subway. 18-year-old Muslim woman claimed that three men attacked her on a Manhattan subway. They tried to pull off her hijab and turned out to be completely fake. She was making that up. Long Island man, Nassau Community College, said he couldn't sleep at night because somebody had drawn swastikas several different times at various different locations on the campus. Three swastikas were found inside of a man's bathroom, and he couldn't sleep at night. I don't know how people sleep at night when they're the ones who do it. Police found out he was the perpetrator. I'm not even a third of the way through these stories that have come out in the last year, and the Washington Post has the guts to say that we're going to use this one to say that people are making things up? No. No, do you not yet get it? This is why we don't believe the news.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
John Ziegler is with us. He is an independent voice and writes for Mediaite, and he is one of the guys... and I think the first to really take this Jussie Smollett case on and say, wait a minute, something's not right here. We talked to him on Friday as this was starting to fall apart, and he laid the case out. John, I'd like you just to lay the case out again real quick, just in case somebody isn't familiar with the case.
Sure. A couple weeks ago, Empire actor Jussie Smollett claimed that at 2 a.m. in Chicago, in the middle of a polar vortex, that he had been attacked by two Trump-loving goons who yelled, among other things, at him racial epithets, insulted his sexuality, and declared Chicago to be MAGA country. Sprayed him with bleach, tied a rope around his neck, I guess, which was supposed to be a noose. He was the victim of a horrible hate crime. And the media, of course, shockingly lapped this up as if this was obviously true and that there was no other scenario that could possibly be the case. Because after all, in their minds, no one ever lies or exaggerates about any of this kind of thing, even though the end result, as you well know, Glenn, and many of your listeners know, is that many of these stories end up being false. And this one never made any sense. And the way that it fell apart over a couple week period of time to me is fascinating. And, you know, I appreciate you giving me the credit because, you know, I don't get credit for any of these types of stories. I have made literally hundreds of dollars over the years going after these stories.
Well, let's not stretch it.
there's it's not fun because, by the way, even when you're right, you still end up taking more grief than you get credit in most cases. But I feel like all I was the kid in The Emperor with No Clothes who's just going, wait a minute, the emperor has no clothes here. Yeah. This is an obvious story. And so, what was fascinating about, just a minute, real quick, what was fascinating to me was I did a series of interviews in Chicago very early on in this story. Where, you know, I'm being used by Chicago radio hosts who are not supposed to be afraid of anything, right? Because they don't want to be the ones to say this is false, so they bring me on because I've written for Mediaite and say and tell them what they already are thinking, but no one wants to say. And that's really what happened here.
It's really frightening. So, John, I think one of the reasons why the average person may have been caught up on this and just accepted it is because at first, he had gone to the hospital, and you got the impression that he had to stay there for a day or two, and so he was really hurt. That's all bogus, too.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you look now who it was, these two Nigerian brothers who are bodybuilders, who were the ones that were involved in this, if they were going to beat Jussie Smollett up, he would have had more than a scratch underneath his eye, and he would not have been able to go to Los Angeles almost immediately to do, I guess we would call it a concert, where he was dancing within a couple of days.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that part didn't make a lot of sense. There were a lot of things that didn't make a lot of sense.
Well, the fact that he held on to his Subway.
Well,
I mean, that's a love. That's a love of a sandwich, man. You're like, I'm fighting off two guys who are trying to beat me up, pour bleach on me, but I am not letting go of this sandwich.
Well, I have to say, and I was, and by the way, the police were, both of us were essentially wrong in our original theory about what happened, because I'm told from my sources, which have been very good on this story from the beginning, that originally the police, and I thought this made sense, because I'm not a conspiracy guy. I despise conspiracies. I believe in incompetence. But even the police were convinced that this couldn't have been a total hoax at first, because it was so poorly done, so incompetently done. Apparently they even rehearsed it. And so I presumed, and again, the police thought this too, that this was some sort of a domestic dispute, a relationship he had had with
right.
one of these two actors that went wrong, and then he created the hate crime allegation afterwards. I am told that police still believe that there was a relationship between Smollett and one of the two of them, but they now believe that what happened here was that Smollett paid them to be part of this. One of the more interesting things I'm looking forward to as this goes along, which I'm sure is not going to happen, is Smollett going to get the Me Too treatment? Because if the police are right that he had a relationship with one of these two guys, he forced them, right, using his power as an actor in a romantic relationship to engage in a crime. Now, that's a Me Too violation, is it
wow.
not?
This thing is absolutely fascinating. I saw it this morning that the police said one of the things that immediately said, wait a minute, this may not be right, is he took him to the scene where it happened, and he immediately pointed out the video camera and said, I am so glad that camera is up there because you caught all of it on video. And it was so obviously pointed in the wrong direction. And they were like, hey, we've never heard that from a victim who's like, and I saw right away that there's a video camera right here. And it
right.
was so obvious that it was not going to pick this up. They went, uh-oh, something's wrong.
Well, Glenn, you make a really great point, which I underestimated the police at the beginning of this. I think the police played possum here.
I do, too.
I think that they made it seem as if they had no idea what was going on. They released the photograph of those two blurbs, those blobs that were the persons of interest. And at that time, I perceived, and I think Smollett perceived, that was a sign of weakness, that the police had nothing. They had no idea what was happening here. It is now very clear they knew immediately what was going on. They had been able to chart those two blobs, which turned out to be the Nigerians, all the way from the scene of the alleged hate crime into an Uber. They identified them. Apparently, they have video of them buying the rope. So they knew their identity from very early on. And, of course, they immediately know they're Nigerian. They're black. One of them works on Empire. This story is clearly false. And, you know, to use what I'm sure the left will think is a bad metaphor, they essentially gave Smollett
enough real rope to hang himself because he ends up identifying them on Good Morning America, which of course was ridiculous to me. You couldn't identify the people when you were being attacked, but you're identifying two blobs in a grainy photograph.
So, and that's the incredible thing is he went on Good Morning America to say he doesn't appreciate how this is just, you know, how he's being treated and called a liar by some. It's just like those Trump people. And they put up the two blobs, and it's really like the back of two guys, isn't it?
I can't even tell.
I don't know, because the faces were so dark, I just thought that they were, I don't know, wearing a hoodie or something and walking the other direction. There's no way you can tell anything about these two guys except it's two big people walking
standing up.
Right. And he gets on and says, I know these are the guys. Well, how do you know? I was there. I saw it. I know these are the guys.
Right, which to me felt like desperation. Like he's just latching on to anything that will substantiate his story. Also, under the belief that the police will never be able to identify these guys when they already had. And, of course, it's a couple hours after the Good Morning America interview finally airs when they apprehend them, they question them, they get them to flip on Smollett. They don't charge them. And now, of course, we're waiting for Smollett. I'm told the police are hoping that Smollett will turn himself in. I'm still very skeptical, Glenn, whether Smollett is going to suffer any severe legal consequences over this. The state's attorney in Cook County, I'm told, is very corrupt. They're going to be under a lot of political pressure to give him a sweetheart deal and let this just go under the rug. I told you on Friday, which I think was a key part of this, that Rahm Emanuel, the mayor of Chicago, was pissed off and he may have unleashed the dogs on Smollett when he went on Good Morning America, but he's not in charge of this anymore. This is a state's attorney's issue. And so I'm still skeptical whether the left will ever really be forced to eat the crow that they should on this. And I also think, and this is important for your audience, I hope that we don't just look at this as the left wants us to, as an isolated incident.
Oh, no, it's not.
This is somehow unique. This is an epidemic. This is an epidemic, especially in the realm of hate crime situations. And it's also, I think, and maybe, you know, I'm sure people, I know I've already driven people on the left crazy for raising this issue. But let's go back to Kavanaugh for a second, Brett Kavanaugh, because we were told that even though Christine Ford's story had no corroboration, by the way, Jesse Smollett's story at least had a time and a place
and a picture of two blobs.
Right, two blobs and a contemporaneous report. I mean, but in comparison, Jesse Smollett's story was fantastically corroborated in comparison to Christine Ford. But we were told the reason we believe Christine Ford is that a prominent person would never tell an untruth about an allegation like this. That would never happen. What do they possibly have to gain? No one would ever do this and put themselves through this. Well, now we know that's bullcrap because Jesse Smollett has done that for whatever reason he did. I don't fully understand why he did it. We may never know, but people do very strange things. And the other thing that's related to this is, the number one misconception, especially the left has, is we now live in a world where being the right kind of victim is the American dream. That's the biggest false premise of the whole thing. People presume we're still living in 19 whatever it was when being a victim was somehow an item of shame. It's not an item of shame anymore. And by the way, maybe it never should have been, but the pendulum has swung so far in the other direction. People want to be a victim. You get adulation. You get attention. You get money in certain situations. I believe Colin Kaepernick figured this out and did it more beautifully than anyone has ever done in creating himself into being a victim. And now, you know, he's made millions and millions of dollars out of it when his football career should have been over by now. So that's the number one premise. Being the right kind of victim is the American dream today.
When I come back, I want you, because you work for Mediaite, I would like to talk about the media and what the media should pull from all of these stories that they've done. What's the real problem here? Part of it is us. The free market is like, who's buying stories about victims? Everybody. I've got a victim story. That's part one. But the other part is journalism and media today. And quite honestly, you touched on in the beginning, fear. John Ziegler. So what is the media going to pull out of this, or should pull out of this, and what role do they play in all of this?
Great question, Glenn. Those are two very different things, what they should and likely will. First of all, I think they're an unindicted co-conspirator in the Jussie Smollett story. And I mean, without them, I don't think Smollett would have ever thought, one, that he could get away with this or that he would get adulation for it. That's number one. Number two, what they should take away from this is, let's not be so damn gullible. Let's not take everything at face value. And, you know, I mentioned on Friday I have an equation. It's really pretty simple. You just take the how implausible a story is, how little corroboration it has, and then you divide it by how hesitant the media or the authorities would be to debunk it because of political correctness concerns. And if you get a number less than one, the story's probably not true. And that formula has worked for me on many, many occasions. And on this occasion, it was as clear as day that the story's probably not true. But the problem here is the business model of the media is broken. It is badly broken. Every single element of the media is broken, which means the two things. Everyone has to lunge after every story that looks like it might get clicks or traffic or trend on Twitter immediately, which means that, of course, there's no time for introspection. There's no time for research or investigation. And then, of course, the other part of the broken business model is that the people within the business have no job security. And when you have no job security, you can't do real journalism, because real journalism requires saying things often that are unpopular or dangerous. Well, in this day and age, if you say something that's unpopular or dangerous when you have no job security, guess what's going to happen to you? Mm-hmm. Especially if you happen to be a white male, you're in a story like this, you're done. It's over, and there's no place to get another job. So that's where the fear comes in that you already referenced. So there's way too much fear. And by the way, no one ever gets fired for jumping on these types of stories. You only get in trouble if you contradict them and don't get vindicated immediately because you pissed off the wrong people.
So John, here's the thing about this is as we're looking at this story, nobody's buying a story. Nobody wants to run a story that the narrative is counter to this one. And so you're not incentivized in any way. Everybody wants to be first or wants to be in the stream. Nobody is actually trying to be right over first. And the last thing is, there isn't anybody in the media that really doesn't want to believe this story. This is what they believe anyway. So it's massive confirmation bias.
100%, especially that's why the liberal media gets these things wrong so often. But I think your point about incentivization is so incredibly important, because there's still a lot of people who believe that truth is the coin of the realm of the media and journalism. I don't know if that was ever the case, but it's definitely not the case now. It's popularity that's what matters, and oftentimes the popular narrative is inherently faulty because of what you mentioned about confirmation bias. And of course, you and I have talked many times about the Penn State Joe Paterno Jerry Sandusky case. To me, this is the patron saint of all of these cases, where what the truth is, and I've investigated for 6 years, I know with every fiber of my being to be 180 degrees different than what the popular narrative was. But the narrative that was popular was so overwhelming that it was a tidal wave over the truth, and the truth is never going to win in that case, and it's not close. And this is not an isolated situation. That's just the most dramatic one I've seen.
Okay, John Ziegler, you can find him at Ziegmund Freud, and also with Mediaite. Thank you so much, John.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hi, it's Glenn. If you're a subscriber to the podcast, can you do us a favor and rate us on iTunes? If you're not a subscriber, become one today and listen on your own time. You can subscribe on iTunes. Thanks.
There has been a time in the past where that was not the way people thought about it. I mean, certainly some did, right? Like, we know that there have been really bad examples of this over the past. But I thought myself, Soul Man was a movie released by a major studio in which the plot of the movie is a white guy goes into blackface to get into Harvard. And it's a hilarious comedy about a white guy who puts on blackface to go into Harvard. Now, we would all say now that would not be something that would be released, and no one would act in it if offered. However, in this period, was it that crazy? Again, it was before Soul Man came out. Like, what, 6 years previous to this, he supposedly wore blackface, okay? And in 1986, the movie Soul Man came out. And I thought to myself, self, what was the New York Times saying about Soul Man in 1986? Because were they out there saying, like, this is a relic from 1884? They said, because now they're saying it's party like in 1884. Here is their review of Soul Man in the New York Times from 1986.
I love you, Stu. I just love you.
There's nothing, again, I want you to understand this, Glenn. There's nothing automatically funny about the story of a rich white college boy who masquerades as a black.
There's nothing, it's not automatically.
Automatically.
It's not automatically. You got to work into this one a little bit. We're going to make you work for that laugh. More than just putting the blackface on, which, of course, funny, but not automatically.
Not automatically. That's not automatically a hit comedy.
Right, okay.
You guys got to go deeper.
Good.
There's nothing automatically funny about the story of a rich white college boy who masquerades as black in order to collect a scholarship to Harvard Law School. That's putting it mildly. But Soul Man, which opens today at Lowe's, State, and other theaters, has a breezy, unapologetic manner. And it also happens to be funny, which goes a long way towards making up for any of the underlying obtuseness or insensitivity. The director has arrived at this cheerful frat house version of Tootsie. A cheerful frat house version of Tootsie.
Yeah, hang on just a second. Could Tootsie even be made today?
I don't think. Probably not. Probably not.
Because wouldn't that be a...
Because it was a guy...
Cross-dresser.
A cross-dresser. And he was pretending to be a woman to be near his children.
Well, I probably that, no, not. That, you're confusing that with Mrs. Doubtfire.
Oh, yeah, I am.
Okay.
That's right, so, I am. This is another one you couldn't make.
I don't think you can make that one
You're
either.
Right. So wait, what's Tootsie about?
Tootsie is the actor that couldn't get a job. He was a great actor, couldn't get a job. He needed to be a strong woman is what they were looking for. So, and everybody's saying he was a bad actor, and he's like, okay, I'll show you. Mm-hmm. It's a brilliant, funny movie. Funny movie. I mean,
probably
not automatically funny. Sure. But funny.
It's a good point. It's not automatically funny. It's important to point out.
Just a guy in a dress isn't automatically funny.
Mm. Now, I will ask this question, Glenn. Is it, as the New York Times called Soul Man in 1986, a blithe, silly, good-natured movie? And of its kind, quite an enjoyable one.
Now, hang on just a second. The governor of Virginia is in trouble. Now, if he was the one... Well, if he's either one in the picture with the Klan, he's in trouble. But he denies that that's him, either the Klan or the blackface guy.
Right. And, this is not something you want to push back on. But, I mean, what's the point of the Klan black guy photo? Like, the only thing I could think of is why this photo would exist is the odd pairing, right? Like, it's an odd couple, like two people going to a party. One's a Klan member and one's a black guy, right? Like,
yeah.
That's probably the quote-unquote joke.
Right.
Again, not that I'm defending it.
Right.
But I don't know. Is that any more or less offensive than being Michael Jackson in blackface previously? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it actually is.
It may be.
It's kind of like, a Jew in... prison guard going with
the
Hitler.
Nazi. Right. Yeah, that's not a good look.
It's not funny.
Not a good look.
Not funny. Mm. However, Michael Jackson, I bet that was a breezy performance. It goes back to what Megyn Kelly was saying.
Yeah.
Is this so bad? Yeah, I think I'm not going to shun anybody, from business 30 years after their life because they did that. However, when you are... when you are doing a tribute to someone like he was doing with Michael Jackson, is that so bad?
Right. In the theory being that if you're trying to compliment someone as dressing up with them, it's the same controversy you see every Halloween now, where if you dress up as a Native American, right, you're taking their culture and it's offensive. But if the person is saying, well, I'm not doing it to be offensive, I'm doing it because I like that culture, is that a problem? And today, absolutely it is. In 1980, was it? I don't know.
No.
In 1986, the New York Times was praising a major studio release about blackface.
You had, for the first time in American history, you had a bunch of white kids wanting to be black like Michael Jackson, and your star, who was black, changing his face to try to be white. Mm.
Or a woman. Or had a very rare disease.
Not sure what that was
right,
about.
Of course. The New York Times goes on to talk about his phony-looking afro in the movie. And this is what actually reminded me of this when you said Cosby. This is one of the quotes from the movie. This is from the white guy in blackface saying, these are the 80s. This is the Cosby decade. America loves black people. This is the hilarious joke. They quote in the movie they're praising. Mark's manner remains unchanged after his physical transformation. His attitudes could not help but be affected. In the end, a Tootsie-like learning experience emerges from this adventure. He finds, for example, that he can no longer stand listening to the Beach Boys.
That's your learning
this
experience?
This is a learning experience. If this seems speedy and superficial course in conscience raising, and it comes relatively late in the film, it's better than nothing. And the pretty actress named Melota Hardin does what little she can with the role of a white girl who wants to sleep with Mark simply because he's black. Something about 400 years of oppression and anger, as she explains it. This isn't a positive review.
So is that still available, do you know?
What?
Can you still rent that? Can you still find that? Because you can't get Song of the South, which is one of the most endearing stories of all time. You cannot get Song of the South.
It's not available on YouTube.
The zippity-doo-dah. No. No. Cannot get it. But you can get this one?
I don't know. That's a good question.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
We had Gad Saad on. Now, Gad is a guy who is a university professor from Canada. He is a guy who just loves the truth and is very concerned about what's happening to the truth in universities and all throughout society. And we talked about everything.
One of the first people Jordan Peterson reached out to when he was having his troubles initially.
Yeah, because he's like the godfather of telling truth. Hmm. You know, and always getting in trouble for it. And he doesn't care. And I love this guy. You're going to fall in love with him when you listen to him. But check it out. Here he is talking about, we say it's Trump derangement syndrome. He calls it something else. Listen to this.
So Munchausen syndrome is where someone feigns a medical condition so that they can garner empathy and sympathy. Oh, poor me. Look at me. I'm sick. Munchausen syndrome by proxy is where you take someone who's under your care, your biological child, your pet, your elderly parent, and you harm them so that you can get and garner the sympathy and empathy by proxy because they're damaged, right? So this is called Munchausen syndrome by proxy. And by the way, the ones who suffer most from that are usually women who harm their biological children to garner the sympathy. Mm-hmm. So I had written a paper talking about the psychiatric disorder. And then when I started seeing the faux victimhood, the screaming, the fake hysteria associated with Trump, that's when I coined the term collective Munchausen, because it was a way for people to seek attention in grotesque ways and truly what seemed to me in false sounding ways, right? I mean, I would see on my Facebook page people sort of testifying to their looming victimhood. I am a woman of color. I attend the University of Maine. Will it still be safe for me to go to college now that Trump... Well, what do you think? There's going to be roadblocks and the Trump storm patrols are going to be ushering you to gang rape centers? I mean, what can justify this level of idiotic hysteria? And so that's why I called it collective Munchausen, because it truly was a confabulation of faux hysteria. What upsets me is that it's one thing for this idiot on my Facebook page to write this stuff. It's another thing when many of my supposedly sophisticated intellectual friends were succumbing to the same hysteria. Mm-hmm. That's what upsets me. So I won't mention any names, but one of my good friends, whom you probably know, is one of the type who will say things like, you know, there's going to be food shortages now that Trump, there's going to be a nuclear holocaust. He's the worst thing since Hitler. And this is a guy who otherwise you would have thought is a terribly sophisticated and dispassionate thinker. And so it's a real mystery to me why they are...
What causes that? What caused that in him?
Yeah.
I think I know who you're talking about. Very smart guy. Very reasoned.
Very. I mean, he's sort of the right. model of the very dispassionate, right? So I pitched an idea on the Rubin Report as to why I think this is happening. I think that the intellectual class views Trump as a what I call an aesthetic injury. Right, he lived. I mean, you know how this beautiful place that you're in. I mean, it's gorgeous aesthetics, right? You have a nice aesthetic sense. Well, academics and intellectual types have a sense of the types of aesthetics that they seek in their leader. Mm-hmm. Barack Obama fit that. He's tall. He's got a beautiful smile. He speaks with a certain cadence of a Southern Baptist preacher. He seems noble and majestic. So it doesn't matter what he says. That most of it is complete. But he, my God, he sounds noble and intellectual. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump is an ogre. He speaks in an ugly way. He's grotesque. He's a brawler. He's a New Yorker. He's swearing. He's grabbed this, right? So on every possible aesthetic metric, he offends my sense of aesthetics. And so I think they are disgusted by him. They are repulsed. It's visceral.
He is a remarkable man. His name is Gad Saad. He's just remarkable the way he thinks. We cover all kinds of topics, really almost everything. At one point we started talking about freedom of speech. Listen to this.
So Munchausen syndrome is where someone feigns a medical condition. Free speech absolutist.
Yeah.
I believe that anything short of a direct exhortation to violence, libel and defamation, everything goes. And the way that I demonstrate my commitment to those principles is I pick the most grotesque possible instance, which is Holocaust deniers to a Jewish person, right? What could be more offensive than taking the historical event that is probably the most documented in history, where people were systematically, you know, exterminated, and allow someone to say, no, it never happened. But if you are a free speech absolutist in a free society, then you have to tolerate the most grotesque. So I tell people, I am a Jewish person and I support the right of Holocaust deniers to reject that the Holocaust ever happened. So I walk the walk, talk the talk. So your hurt feelings, frankly, I don't give a blank about. Life is anti-fragile, to use the term of Nassim Taleb, right? You grow by being... That which doesn't kill you makes you stronger, correct? Therefore,
postmodernists say that which doesn't, how is this the turn of the phrase on this?
We could have cut this part out of this, for the love of me.
I've never heard the postmodern.
Yeah, okay, yeah, they've twisted it and turned it around upside
down. So it really, I find it very frustrating because it is a perfect way to stifle discussions, right? Don't criticize Islam, because that's my religious faith. That hurts me. What do you mean? In a free society, you can go on Twitter and say what a bunch of crock Judaism is. If I'm strong in my beliefs, I shouldn't worry about what Glenn Beck thinks.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.